Welcome to our first 2008 meeting of the Transportation and Transit Policy Subcommittee of the Minnesota House of Representatives, or a subcommittee of the Transportation Finance Committee. I'm Frank Hornstein, the chair, and I'd like to welcome the members back and, of course, everyone from the public that's here today. We have several very important bills that we're going to take up. We don't have a quorum yet. Representative Holbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have a new Republican researcher with us today.
And a new page. I'll introduce them both. And several pages, I think. But that's a good reminder. Thank you, Representative Holbert. Anyway, it's a new year, and I appreciate the members that are here. I will be having conversations with those that aren't, because especially on a day like today when we have a very important bill before us with a lot of public interest. But before we get to Representative Madore's bill, we have several new faces that I want to acknowledge and introduce. Tessa Koob is going to be our page. You may have seen her at the Transportation Finance Committee. And Tessa, if you wanted to say a couple words of introduction.
I'm from St. Louis Park, and I graduated in December from UW-Eau Claire.
Okay, welcome. And we also have Andrew Knutson here. He's a new person on the Republican Caucus Research Team. And our previous Mr. Greg Stone is... now the director of research, so it just goes to show you that the Transportation Committee is a stepping stone for bigger and better things. Mr. Knutson, a couple words about yourself.
Live in Napa Valley, and I've been here at the Capitol for about 2 years. I was a committee page about 2 years ago and came to the sergeant's office and up into Health and Human Services, constituent services for the GOP caucus, and now I'm a researcher of transportation.
All right, well, thank you again and welcome. And our first bill of the day is House File 2943, and we would normally have a motion to approve the minutes, but we don't have a quorum. And when we get a quorum, I will go over a couple of housekeeping items while the rest of the group is here in terms of how we're going to do business this year, which is going to be quite rapid given our early bill deadline of March 14th. So, Representative Madore, I do appreciate the fact that you got your paperwork in pretty quickly and requested the hearing, and that's why we're here. So, without further introduction, I want to welcome Representative Madore, our vice chair, to the stand and tell us a little about House File 2943. You can move your own bill because you're a member of the committee here.
Well, then I would like to do that, please. I'd like to move House File 2943, and there is an amendment additionally. Do we want to work with the
amendment? Okay, I'd like to work with the amendment, but I do believe, members, that this bill is a policy bill that what we're going to do with these is to move them ahead, as we have in the past, to the Finance Committee, where it will then be held for consideration in the omnibus transportation policy bill, which I'll explain a little later. We are going to have a new policy bill. We have the old one that we're going to hopefully get done on the floor, the one from last year, in a couple of weeks. So these, all of the policy bills here, unless the office specifies otherwise, will be held over for inclusion in a second omnibus policy bill. So that's where your bill is going. And please explain your amendment.
Okay, the amendment that we have is House File 2943A2. So you should have that. It's pretty fast. Is that correct?
We have an A1 amendment. Okay. Okay. A2. So I understand that amendment is being copied for distribution. You can still talk to us about it.
Okay.
But I just, for clarification, Representative Madore, the A1 is not...
that's correct.
That's something we can recycle at this point?
That's correct,
okay.
Yes. A2 gets the bill in the state that we'd like.
Why don't you... just go over that as soon as it's copied, we'll vote.
Okay. All right. Well, basically, what this bill is it takes a look at trying to create an implementation plan for paratransit, transit for people with disabilities, looking at getting to 90% of service needs by 2025. It's a little further than I'm comfortable with, but MnDOT assures me that this might be something that we could get to if we would have funding. And we will discuss that in another committee at another time, but basically what this bill looks like it's creating a report to the legislature with an implementation plan to get civil service here. The A2 amendment just changes the date that the report is due from January 15th to February 15th. There's a section that we delete in the bill, and then also a greater description of the service assessment report. So with that, can we, do we have to,
well,
because we don't have
Representative Medora, we don't have a quorum, so actually the, you know, we'll all the motions will have to be held over until that time. And I understand that you do have some funding in here, so this actually won't be laid over for inclusion. It will actually go to the full finance committee, and then the chair of the finance committee will decide its proper routing after that.
With the changes we made, you're right, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry.
So that's okay, but we will we'll vote to include your amendments when we have a quorum. And I think we should just proceed with the testimony at this point, if that's
okay
with
you. That would be great. Well, I guess then we'd like to start with Mr. Nachbar.
Good afternoon, Chairman Hornstein and members of the committee. My name is Jeff Nachbar. I'm the Public Policy Director for the Brain Injury Association of Minnesota, which represents the more than 100,000 Minnesotans living with a disability as a result of a brain injury. I'm also here representing the Minnesota Consortium for Citizens with Disabilities, which is a coalition of over 100 organizations, a third of which are advocacy-based organizations and two-thirds which are providers, which advocate the interests of all folks with all kinds of disabilities across the state. And we're here to talk about our transportation bill. I do want to mention that when we first announced that we were going to have a hearing on this bill and asked who wanted to testify, I got 15 people who wanted to testify. And in the interest of the time of the busy legislature and the committees, we've narrowed that down to just a few. So, but I do want to let you know we have people here from Crookston, Bagley, Marshall, Climax, Fergus Falls, Rock Rapids, St. Cloud, and Shelley. And what I ask folks to do is to put their testimony in writing, if I could just pass that on, around. So 15 people wanted to be here to talk today, so we'll keep it brief in the interest of time. Finding adequate transit and transportation is a universal problem for people with disabilities. I'm probably not telling you anything you don't already know, but obviously it limits their ability to find and maintain viable employment so they can provide themselves with an income in order to become a Minnesota taxpayer. It limits their housing options and decisions about where to live. It limits their ability to get to their service and care appointments. And most importantly, it limits their ability to become independent and to maintain their independence. And we know that communities all across Minnesota, the state and the demographics are changing. We're finding more folks with disabilities who are living in a community setting. You know, the population is aging. We can't pick up a paper without reading about the baby boomers getting ready to retire. We also know that many more people in the future, even over the last few months, there's been an increasing need and desire for better and more transit. More people would use it if it would become available. Now, the bill is really, you know, quite simple. What we tried to do is, rather than, you know, each group or each disability saying we want this, we want that, let's get more transit options available to all folks. So Section 1 and 2 deals with transit in Greater Minnesota with the Minnesota Department of Transportation, and Section 3 deals with the Met Council, which, as you know, is transit in the Seven County metro area. As Representative Medora said, Section 1 requires MDOT to meet 80% of the unmet transit needs by 2015 and 90% of unmet transit needs by 2025. And then Section 2 and 3, number 2, requires MDOT to report to the legislature on the unmet needs for transit in Greater Minnesota and progress on meeting those needs. And Section 3 essentially requires the Met Council to do the same thing and to add additional transit information in their reports and an assessment on how to meet those unmet needs. So I want to be clear, though, the purpose of this bill is to develop and implement plans to meet transit needs into the future for people with disabilities, as well as all folks that rely on transit, senior citizens as well. These needs will not only increase into the future, but we must need to be prepared to meet them. This bill is a tool that will provide you as the legislators a set of numbers which are necessary to sort of monitor what are the needs, what's out there, what is it that we're trying to do with this, and adequately plan how to support these needs. And so this is not about creating new studies or new reports or new funding streams. Rather, it's about building on current reports and get this information into your hands so that it can help you guys as you go through and make sound policy and funding decisions. So that's the purpose of the bill and why we're here today. Thank you.
Representative Houseman, thank you, Mr. Nakwar. Representative Houseman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Medora, I don't know the route of your bill, but I wonder if you would be open to an amendment at some point, whether we would also direct MnDOT to work with the Wisconsin Department of Transportation. My understanding is not only as that Highway 94 corridor goes over into Hudson, but also some of the discussion about high-speed rail to Chicago. Wisconsin is ready to work with us and wants to, but I think they needed this, I mean, that MnDOT would just need to be directed to work with the Wisconsin DOT on some of those interstate plans.
Mr. Chair and Representative Houseman, absolutely, absolutely. And you know I'm a big proponent of that high-speed rail line as well, so whatever I can do, I'm more than happy to accept an amendment on this. To do that.
Yeah, we'll have time to fix it up. Are there any additional questions for Mr. Nakwar? Representative Medora?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I just want to take a minute as we're waiting for our next testifier to come up to explain why we are enlarging our scope here to look for new and unmet ridership needs. One of the issues that we have is that as people are determined to be disabled, oftentimes they don't seek transportation services because there's a process with which they have to qualify in the metro area for a metro mobility card. Those riders are actually very specific in nature, and what we're trying to get at here is the number of people that are coming from. We're looking at a number of disabled American vets coming back. We're looking at a number of people who are aging and are giving up their driver's license, so is there a population there for us to target? So it's really the bigger issue of serving needs of people who can no longer drive. So that's kind of what was the drive was behind this bill. And as Mr. Nakwar said, it's expanding our scope of who may actually need services in the future.
Well, thank you very much. Before you introduce your next speaker, just on a personal note, I really appreciate the work that Mr. Nakwar has done over the years. And, you know, between Mr. Nakwar and you, Madam Chair, Madam Vice Chair and Representative Medora, we have a big crowd here because you're both excellent organizers, and I think that's very much appreciated, and that you've been able to involve so many people in your work. It's a real something we don't see around here very often, and I think we need to see more of it. So just for me, I really appreciate that. So if you can introduce our next testifier.
Who's now become a very good friend of mine, Mr. John Sherman from DEEB will give us some update here on how the bill would impact this area.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Sherman.
For the committee's record, I'm John Sherman. I'm with the Community Partners Unit of Rehabilitation Services in the Department of Employment and Economic Development. And I was told 2 minutes, so I can be very brief and make the point very quickly. Mr. Nakwar, in his testimony, talked about the relationship of employment and transportation. Frankly, if you can't get to your job, you don't have a job. We're in the business of finding and supporting people who have serious disabilities in employment. And I can tell you from all of our partners, from our staff, from the community rehabilitation programs we work with the Centers for Independent Living that we work with, every single provider who is involved in employment and independence will tell you that transportation is one of the top three issues. Mass transit is what is a required piece for most individuals that we work with. It will be an issue, and we will return to an employment shortage in this state in the next 10 years. It will be an issue in finding and getting to employment extremely good workers. I just came from a meeting of our senior managers, and just for fun, I asked them, these managers, how many in each of their regions, and it was both metro and rural, is transportation a major problem? They laughed at me, since we all know that, and they stuck their hands up, so I have an official count, it's unanimous. But I'll also tell you that just from an administrative viewpoint, we put out a lot of bus cards, because that's how individuals get to medical appointments, how they get to job appointments, how they get to our office to work with our counselors, it's how they get to community rehabilitation programs. Many of our community rehabilitation programs are the paratransit in rural areas right now. They run bus systems in effect. They don't like normally running bus systems, but if they're going to get people to their jobs, that's what has to happen. Employment training and mass transit, both in rural and urban areas, is a significant employment requirement. I guess I think I can end my testimony at that point, and I will stand for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Sherman. Any questions from the committee? We do have a quorum, but I'll wait on moving the minutes until the testifiers are done.
I need to finish. I'll keep this one.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Next, we have Sally Lyon from Marshall.
Welcome, Ms. Lyon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and subcommittee members. I'm so happy to be here today. I do hope you'll bear with me. I've never done this before, so I'm a little nervous.
You're doing great so far, but if you could just state your name for the record.
I will. I'm Sally Lyon, and I'm from the Southwestern Center for Independent Living. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here and talk with you about the challenges we face in transportation in Southwest Minnesota. As I think was stated earlier, I live in Marshall, Minnesota, which is a town of approximately 12,000 people. Now, my town is approximately half the population of our entire county of Lyon County. And I rely on public transit daily, typically using it several times a day as I go back and forth between two jobs and also various meetings and volunteer opportunities. If transit wasn't there, I wouldn't get anywhere. I've encountered problems with transit throughout my time. I used to work a morning shift that began a half an hour before public transit was available. A friend ensured that I was able to get to work for that shift, but obviously that was a temporary solution. And eventually, I was forced to quit that position. Thankfully, by that time, another position had opened up, and I was able to use public transit for a later shift and was able to keep my job. But even now, as I'm working still two jobs, I have a shift that starts on Saturday afternoon and goes until after transit is available in the evening. I typically get done around 6:45 p.m. and I rely on coworkers or friends to get me home. Now, if coworkers or friends are not available to get me home, then it's not atypical at all to see me put my wheelchair a mile and a half from my job to my home to get home from work. But in reality, I know that I'm one of the lucky ones, because in my job at the center, I talk to several others living in smaller towns who simply don't work for lack of transportation. They would if they could get there, but have no way to get there. I'm also a member of the Marshall Area Transit Committee, which meets regularly to talk about our transit issues locally. Our transit agency is Western Community Action, and our director's name is Jeanette Aguirre. WCA offers transit in Cottonwood, Jackson, Lincoln, Lyon, and Redwood counties. Trip statistics from last year in Lyon County show that 82% of the trips were in the city of Marshall. That leaves only 18% serving the rest of the county. So as you can see, that means that the vast majority of the trips, public transit outside of the county seat, is basically non-existent. And then we also deal with policy issues. Policy issues exist between human service agencies, managed care providers, and transit programs regarding interpretations of client rights in accessing services. And because there are multiple funding options available for different riders, duplication occurs because people aren't working together to provide services. This has to be eliminated for it to be most effective for everyone. And in rural Minnesota especially, this compounds itself even further. included with my the written testimony, you will have some statistics for Western Community Actions. You can see some of the statistics for ridership and that, on all of that stuff with my testimony. And again, I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Lyon. And you know, I think I'm sure I speak for everyone on the committee in expressing our heartfelt condolences and prayers to you and your community for the tragedy that took place there yesterday. I'm sure in such a small community, it just really felt very deeply. And so our prayers are with you in this difficult.
My prayers are with you too. We're actually waiting to get back home to find out exactly what happened, because we were here in the city. We came up yesterday. So thank you for your prayers.
Questions from the committee for Ms. Lyon? Okay, well, thank you very much. Do we have a... Okay.
I do have one question.
Yes, the Representative Portman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if there's any transportation services between Marshall and the Twin Cities.
Well, the answer to that question, I suppose, would be yes, but it would be incredibly costly. You could get a volunteer driver, and they do. There are volunteer drivers, but it's... And some of those statistics for volunteer driving, and I think even cost is in some of the attachments to my testimony, but you'll have to forgive me. I don't know exactly what's in there because I did not put it together. But it is very, very costly. I, in fact, had to look into the possibility of a volunteer driver wants to get from Marshall to Wilmer, which is about half the distance, and it was going to cost me $60-some. So to get from Marshall to the cities would probably be at least double that.
Mm-hmm. Representative Portman.
Just to ask you, and if you don't want to answer, that's fine. How did you get here? Did you have a friend drive you, or did you?
Actually, we were able to work it out quite well. Our office comes down here once a year anyway. So we just, there's a group of us from our office down here now, and we just all came together. So it worked out quite well. Thank you.
Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Lyon, is that a county system or is that the WAC? Is that the system who operates it? Do they operate daily or on call? Or is that, and do you operate on Saturday?
They are daily. Actually, just recently they started offering Sunday services. They do operate daily. We are. So on Saturday I can get to work, but by the time I'm finished, they're shut down already for the day. So they shut down at about, I believe the bus itself actually shuts down at 7 p.m., but they quit taking riders at 6:30. So it is available, but it's very, very limited. It's limited on Saturday. It's limited even further on Sunday. They're actually only open for about 4 hours of active transit on Sunday.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
No problem. Thank you.
Okay. Just for members and the public, we have this bill and I think another pretty important and mm-hmm. bill that the Representative Yaros has and two others. And we have to adjourn at 4. So I would just ask... the bill authors and testifiers that we can get through this and vote on these bills to make your points, that's important, but as efficiently as possible.
We'll move them along, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
I realize
we want to move this important bill today.
And these the next two people who come actually took their day off of work today to be here.
Well, that's why we'd like to hear from
them. Is Dave Christensen? Where is it?
Yes. Hello, my name is Dave Christensen, and I've been a special education teacher for the past 28 years in Clearwater County. I'm here to speak on behalf of my students and individuals with disabilities that are unable to maintain employment due to the lack of state and county transportation assistance. Each year I sit across the table from my students' parents in IEP meetings and share the child success and skills that they've gained during their high school years, and most of my students have acquired part-time employment in my program while in school. But then I have to tell the parents that after graduation that unless they themselves are financially able to support their child's transportation to employment sites, the county offers minimal help. Graduation comes and goes, and soon after, parents are unable to juggle their jobs and their child's employment, transportation, and their child's employment transportation needs. The new graduate loses his or her job, sits idly at home, hopes gone, skills dwindling, and eventually no longer a productive member to society. As a young man, I saw the same frustrations with my sister with similar disabilities. Her experience has been the same due to the lack of transportation assistance, and I vowed never to let this happen with my future students, but it hasn't changed and the problem continues. Our schools in Clearwater County collaborate with Minnesota Workforce and Vocational Rehabilitation Services. These agencies contribute funding to assist students in developing skills for future employment while in high school. The goal is to remove the barriers that would prevent them from becoming productive citizens in their communities, and local businesses are in place to hire students with disabilities. These students again and again prove themselves with their diligence and success on job sites. Employers often state that these individuals are generally more reliable than their non-disabled peers. Few of my students will ever acquire a driver's license due to their disabilities. Some facts I'd like you to know about Clearwater County is, according to the 2000 census, 815 people are classified as disabled, ages 21 to 64. This is 18.5% of our county population. Clearwater County has 258 students in special education, which indicates a documented level of disability. 50% of all students are on free and reduced lunches. Currently, 35 students in school have significant and multiple disabilities. Somewhere between 815 and 35 individuals are without private means to transportation due to disabilities. While the focus of transportation service has been for the elderly, it needs to include individuals with disabilities. We're working together with neighboring counties and tribal systems to develop efficient systems for all those in need, but current funding does not support our efforts. Our county has seen an unemployment jump as high as 16.5% in the last 2 years. The Clearwater County 2008-2009 MFIP-CTSA Biennial Service Agreement reported that 95% of Minnesota Family Investment Program clients are unable to secure private transportation. It was a major barrier to employment. The solution? Clearwater County needs MnDOT funding to establish and support this needed transportation system. Millions of dollars are invested by our state and federal government through Vocational Rehabilitation Services, Minnesota Workforce, and Minnesota Family Investment. To allow a barrier such as inadequate transportation systems undermine these investments and create fiscal losses to the county. Self-sufficiency of individuals with disabilities reduces the demands on future dollars. Investing in a transportation system that meets the needs of Clearwater County is an investment in the future success of citizens of northern Minnesota. Without your help, the problem continues. The leaky bucket is dripping faster and faster, and we're losing precious, employable individuals. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, one of the big efforts that's being made by the disabled community, and you can see them today sitting here, is that we're tired of being tax burdens and we want to become taxpayers. And the only way we're going to be able to do that is to get a job. The only way we can get a job is to be able to get to a job. So you'll see all these people sitting here today. That is the mantra of the disabled community. We're changing our tone. We're ready to move on to be taxpayers. So I do have one more testifier. Thank you very much, Mr. Christensen. If that would be...
Thank you, Mr. Christensen. Thank you for making the trip all the way down from Bagley. I think you're up by Bemidji, if I'm not...
Very far. one of our next person...
My name is Cordelia, and I'm here since 20 years at the Metropolitan Center for Independent Living here in Tabor. So, and I really appreciate you giving me the time to talk to you today. So thank you. Transportation has always been my biggest barrier. The lack of reliable, affordable, consistent transportation has made participating in community, employment, and health-related activities difficult and dangerous. When looking for jobs, I found that I was very hindered by lack of timely, reliable, and affordable transportation. I had two options, the terminal building and the city bus. Scheduling rides in the terminal building is difficult, especially for getting to work. I am often treated as though I have a lower intelligence due to my impediment. And when a ride is scheduled, it is seldom the ride that is requested. When I had a job interview and it was going well, and it went over by 3 minutes, and my mentor wife decided to release due to my weakness, and it was also written up as a no-show, which is kept track of, and if you get so many, then you're not allowed to ride anymore. And as I said, I managed the peer mentoring program, and most of my consumers use my mobility to fulfill their duties as mentors. This includes training the defendants and going out into the community. I worked with one very bright lady who had been camping, and she told me that she was asked to leave her community college due to her constant weakness and no fellows in class, and this was a woman who depended on mental mobility to get to and go. Metro transit, the bus system, was like heaven compared to mental mobility, although there are some things that need to be worked on. The behavior of the drivers is questionable and treated as a burden to pick up. I'm called wheelchair, that person with a disability. I've been passed over from buses that don't feel like picking me up. I've also been stranded in sub-zero weather due to buses malfunctioning. The light rail has been like a godsend. Using the light rail, I use it every day to get to work. It's reliable and safe. My only issue with that is that the ticket process is not accessible to those who have mobility issues and dexterity issues. Also, getting off and on a train in Minnesota frigid weather is not accessible either, because you have to push the door button to get in or out. So what is really needed is the expansion of light rail to the metro area in Greater Minnesota. It would also allow people to have better access to colleges, employment opportunities, and medical care, arts, sciences, cultural experiences, and would allow all people with disabilities to contribute to economic growth. The lack of adequate transportation is consistently the biggest barrier to living the life that we all wish to without disability dream of. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much. Very much appreciate your testimony. Any comments or questions from members of the committee? Okay, thank you, Representative Medora, and I don't know if, I think we do have Mr. Gottfried from the MnDOT Office of Transit, and maybe after Mr. Gottfried's testimony we'll ask for some quick closing comments, and then we'll vote on your amendments and vote on the bill.
Thank you.
should have come down here sooner.
Hi, I'm Tom Godfrey.
Welcome.
I'm with the Minnesota Department of Transportation, Office of Transit. You may be more familiar with Donna Allen, who just recently retired, and I'm currently going to be filling in for some legislative issues and questions that we have, and any concerns that we have relative to some legislation, and that's why I'm before you today relative to this legislation. First off, I would like to say I appreciate that people were able to come down here, and specifically the marshal. I'm very proud of that system because actually I had a lot to do with the design of getting that system up and running. I think it's recognized that there's limits of how much public transit services in greater Minnesota can do. It's all associated with the fiscal limitations that are attached to that. Our concern, and the department has a concern relative to the legislation that's before us, is in twofold. First off is it indicates a implementation plan, and there's no cost associated with actually putting together an implementation plan. Currently, there is a transit plan in place for 2001 that carries us through 2010. And on the governor's website, there is a document that's similar to this. I'll scan these out. That actually shows the actual current performance of the transit systems as we're providing transit services in greater Minnesota and as it compares to what the transit plan indicates, and it shows a gap. Currently, right now, we're just under 1 million hours of service actually on the street in greater Minnesota, and in 2008, we're supposed to be at, according to the plan, 1.3 million hours, roughly, about a 300,000-hour gap. That has actually been demonstrated as indicated that the service hours are not running from, you know, midnight to, you know, to, you know, 2 o'clock, you know, the time frame of 6 a.m. in the morning to midnight, that the service does not operate everywhere across the state. There is a cost associated with that and, of course, the limited funding. One of the implementation plans that's indicated here is actually all well and good, and all the other aspects that are in the plan actually already current in the plan, as Representative Medora had put in there, that we already currently incorporate, and some of you may be familiar with this. If you're not, I'd be happy to send you these copies. We've made a limited publication of these. It actually incorporates a good portion of the information that's already being asked in the plan into the amendment as we see it today. What's not incorporated into our annual report is this implementation plan. And we're anticipating that that's going to be similar to a transit needs assessment study that we did back in 1994 that did avail us some extra expansion of services at that time when there was funding available. That money was made available to us first, and then the implementation plan was put there. The challenge right now with the implementation plan being put, it creates expectations that these services are going to be done because you have a very specific ideal as to how you are actually going to roll out services. Without funding to actually implement those services, the plan becomes a piece of paper that gets stuck on the shelf. So it's a concern that we're wanted to bring to you right here is the issue associated with it. The plan itself would probably cost somewhere around $250,000. That's a ballpark figure that we're working with right now based on the same scope that we would have done relative to two other studies that we've done rather recently.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Godfrey. We have a question from Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Godfrey, am I correct in assuming I wasn't aware of it, but you're running a deficit of about $1.8 million this last year?
Mm-hmm. Currently, right now, with the governor's proposal as it was originally presented at the last session, there was a funding package that was put together by the governor's proposal and what we currently now have funding. There is a $1.7 million difference in between what the governor originally proposed and what we actually have in funding for this current biennium.
Representative Leader.
Mr. Godfrey, have you ever been able to testify before a committee that you needed money? I'm not aware of it. At least it would come before the committee, which I chair. And we weren't aware of it. We're trying to put transportation monies together, and we're shooting in the dark, and all of a sudden we find out now that you do have a deficit that we may not be totally addressing. We hope if we pass a bill, we're addressing it.
This is the first time I've been before any kind of hearing that would indicate that dollar amount being an indication to the
legislature.
Thank you, leader, for that question. Representative Holbert.
Mr. Chair, I guess what I heard was that there was a governor's proposal, and I think some of the funding shortfall might be a result of a lights on package being passed by the legislature. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't think we should just assume that they never asked for it. I think they did ask for it in the governor's budget, a certain level of funding, and then for some reason, with the lights on bill, it might not have been there. I don't know.
Representative
Mr. Chair, I appreciate that, but I think someone would inform us that they were short of money specifically now after that lights on bill was passed last session. And that's the problem we have here. I'm not aware of this at all, that there was a shortage of funds. We assume that they're going along with what they have.
Further discussion? Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question about whether this... my understanding is this bill is generating a fiscal note because this would put a responsibility of planning on to MnDOT that they're not currently doing. Is that right?
For Greater Minnesota, yes.
And I just want to express a little bit of frustration with that idea. The idea of meeting 80% of the transit needs by 2015 seems to me to be kind of like a duh, that this is what our state Department of Transportation should be developing plans for, and that we should, as legislators, be able to ask the question of how much would it cost if we wanted to do that, and then we know the answer. And I understand you have to hire consultants, and there's a lot of expertise and complexity in coming up with these numbers, but to me, the very mission of the agency should be to be developing these plans. So, to me, it should be something that's very much within existing resources. So I'm very frustrated by the idea that we can't even find out what would it cost to take care of people in the way that we should without giving them $250,000 to figure it out.
Point well taken. Any further discussion, members? Representative Holbert.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Medora, have you looked also at including in this any coordination of effort and or funding with human services? I know this is something that was looked at 4 or 5 years ago, and that they're running bus services for doctor's appointments, et cetera. And I know it was a can of worms. It was ugly when anybody even just started to talk about it. But it seems like there should be some opportunity to have some coordination. I don't understand why we have a two-tiered transportation system serving in large part the same population.
Yeah.
And I think it's one of those silo things where nobody wants to talk to each other. But I would think that maybe it might be helpful in your bill as this moves forward to maybe at least put in a line or at least look at it again. Or
Mr. Chair and Representative Holbert, I spent the last several months asking that same question. Why is it the issue is the funding dollars for those rides? We have the DHS provide rides through managed care and other programs are specific to a medical condition. So in other words, they'll pick somebody up to take them to the doctor, but if they happen to work a block away, well, they're not going, that's a separate ride allocation. So what happens is we have transportation, and then we have medical transportation. And we're not putting those monies back. And a couple of years ago, we created a brokerage service for our medical transportation. So we've now created another level of bureaucracy for us to capture some of those dollars and use it for transportation, general transportation service. So it has been a real struggle for me to get these things even identified so that we can sit down and say, okay, what do we need? That was the purpose of the report and then the amendment, is to look at all the populations that we're serving. If we're going to keep siloing by medical and then other transportation, where are those numbers so that we can say, you know, DHS is getting several millions of dollars. I don't know what that number is, so I don't want to quote it, but why aren't we using some of those dollars to serve this population? It is the same population. And we should be making things easier for everybody around and saving us some money as well. But this report will do the first step in the metro area to identify that for us. or that's the goal anyway, once we put those two figures together. Mr. Gottfried here has met with me several times over the last year, and this is the same frustration we have in Greater Minnesota as well. So,
and Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, I don't know if this has been amended. I had a constituent appointment, so I was out of the room for a while. And
no, we're going to do that motion.
Is it the
A2? It's not
been
amended, and the A2 is before us, and if there's no further discussion, we will discuss that amendment.
If I might, then where in the bill is that reference made to the coordination, or at least looking at that issue?
It isn't in the bill, no, because the funding mechanism that provides for this service can't go into DHS funding, because that's medical transportation only. You can't, these two systems do not work together because of where the funding comes from. Transportation money comes from a specific stream. Medical funding comes from Medicaid programs, which have very strict rules on how we can use those services. So we can't marry them together in this bill. I would love to, but we can't because of the way the funding is received by the state.
Representative Holbert?
No.
Yeah, it's very frustrating. It's been very, very frustrating to me. And as I work with the advocates, I can only imagine, you know, I've got the luxury of hopping in my van at the end of the day. I can't imagine some of the hardships that they've had to deal with this. So.
Okay, members, if there's no further discussion, what I'd like to do is take up the A2 amendment. And again, this is the author's amendment that was presented at the beginning of the hearing, and if there's no further discussion, all in favor of the A2 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? The motion prevails, and so we have now before us House File 2943 as amended. The motion, Representative Medora renews her motion to recommend this bill to pass and then be referred to the Transportation Finance Committee for further consideration. So all in favor of that motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And the motion prevails. So congratulations, Representative Medora, and thank you very much for all the testimony. Appreciate all the people that traveled from many different communities to testify. We appreciate your being here. This is the People's House, and you're always welcome. Now, members, I do want to just briefly go over a couple of housekeeping items now that we seem to have a critical mass of committee members. The first would be to approve our minutes from March 21st. Wow, it's almost a year ago that we last met. So, Representative Hortman will move the minutes of March 21st. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. The motion prevails. And just a couple of quick housekeeping notes before we call in Representative Carlson. We do have one more. We have Representative Carlson's bill, which also deals with disabilities. And then we have Representative Yaros's cell phone bill. I really hope we can get to Representative Medora's Cedar Avenue bill, but we have the cell phone bill. I think will be will generate a lot of interest, so I'm hoping that's our goal, but it may not come to be. But that's the transition to some brief comments I wanted to make about our committee this year. We have a very quick deadline of March 14th, and so that really leaves us only with a couple of three more meetings. What we would like to do, as we did last year, is to have a committee bill, an omnibus transportation policy bill, Roman numeral number 2. And for those members and people in the public who have been asking about the first policy bill that we completed last year, that is currently at the desk. It was ready to go the last night of session. What will happen to that bill is that the conference committee, by motion on the floor, will be reconstituted. It will meet, I believe, briefly, because we do not, Senator Murphy and I will not be taking any new or controversial amendments to that legislation. There's some effective dates that need to be updated, and then that bill will go to the floor, and I believe that we have some pretty good consensus on it. Everyone worked very hard on it. We'll pass that bill, and then we'll get the new legislation brought before this committee. Will then be wrapped up in the Finance Committee, where all the referrals will go from here. Our goal is to get that done by the committee deadline of March 14th. So that means, members, that both for members of the committee and the broader membership of the House, and I hope that the leads on our committee can get the word out to respective caucuses to please get any policy-oriented bills jacketed and introduced. Really, it's my intention to give consideration to members and hear these bills, but we want to really get them done quickly and efficiently, so the sooner these bills can get in. We have a wonderful committee administrator, Abby Mann, but in consideration of her and our hardworking staff, Matt Burr, let's get those bills in so we can get those hearings done. It would not be my preference to schedule additional hearings, but we may have to based on the number of bills. We had more bills in this committee than, or as many as in many real standing committees, even though we're a subcommittee. That's another conversation, but so I do appreciate all the interest, but let's get these bills in, members. And a final note is that in sort of consideration of testifiers, I know that we have a very busy legislative schedule these days, constituent visits, etc., but as best as you can, please try to come here at 2:15 so we can get a quorum and get moving. So, with that, I will call on Representative Carlson to present to us House File 2408.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and you should have an amendment available, and if it's all right with the chair, if someone would move the bill and then the amendment.
The chair will move the bill, House File 2408, and the DE1 amendment. And this will be a straight policy bill, I believe. There's no... I'm asking the finance chair if he's got finance.
Well, that's turned out to be an interesting question, kind of at the last minute today. I understand MDOT that they may have to... do some changes with their computer programming, and that there might be a slight cost with that, so they were going to prepare a fiscal note. They didn't get one to me. I don't know if they did to your staff.
Oh, I'm not aware of one, but...
So maybe to make sure we should...
We'll send this to Transportation Finance,
yeah.
And you know, that's where any of these bills go anyway, and if...
And then we'll see if...
Representative Leader, it could go in the omnibus bill as well. But right now, we'll send it to Finance, and
yeah, that's fine.
That'll be the motion.
Chairman, and then that way, if there is a cost, we can have some discussion about that.
Let's take up the delete all, then. And, members, does everyone have the 2408DE1 before you? All those in favor signify by saying aye. I'll oppose no. And now we have... the bill in the shape that Representative Carlson would like to present it to us. Proceed, Representative Carlson.
Yeah, and Chairman, thank you. And this bill allows an individual to receive up to two sets of disability license plates for their motor vehicles. And under current law, an individual can receive up to two disability play cards or one set of disability license plates in one car placard, excuse me. So I'm bringing this legislation forward actually on behalf of a senior citizen who has witnessed firsthand the hardship some people face because they are not currently able, under state law, allowed to have two sets of disability license plates for both their vehicles, so the issue is if they have two. And the senior citizen, a gentleman by the name of Richard Schwab, who couldn't be here today, who works at a parking ramp at North Memorial Hospital, said many days senior citizens and other people with disability plates will talk to him while he's on duty at the hospital parking ramp because they've been tagged because they have forgotten to put the placard on their car. And he thought, and I concurred, that an easy solution would be to allow them to have two sets of license plates, and then they wouldn't have to worry about moving the placard from one car to another or forgetting to display it, which sometimes happens, and then they get a tag that has a significant cost to it. And he said he frequently has citizens coming to him, and they'll say, well, we have the handicap authorization. I just forgot to put the placard up on the visor. So that's the issue, Mr. Chairman, in a nutshell. And Margo Hendike, I think is the way to pronounce her last name, was here until just a few moments ago, and she said with the amendment, because the way the revisor had originally drafted it, it struck some new language that they had requested to be inserted, I think, last year. So that language is reinstated, and we just say two plates. And she said for me to feel free to say that they endorse the bill now as amended.
Okay.
And would have testified had she been able to remain a little longer.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Representative Leader has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Carlson, I remember in the past the discussions we had in committee on disability plates. It appears to me you're giving a permanent set of plates, and that's why they use a placard, because it's the disability community, as I remember, came in and complained that a lot of people, they're temporarily disabled, you know, 3 months or 6 months, and you give them a permanent plate here, and the family is using it. Is that going to create that problem again back in here? That was an issue we had in the past, and I can see that that would be coming up now, wouldn't it?
Well, I...
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, if they've got the card and they have, and they're continuing to use it beyond what they're supposed to, if it's temporary, then I would say that they would be in violation of the law currently and shouldn't be doing that. Do they get a, maybe I'll ask the chair of the transit or transportation committee, do they get a permanent plate if it's a temporary disability, or do they get a placard? I don't know the answer to that question. Maybe you do.
I don't, but maybe Chair Leader...
yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Carlson, I guess that's the question I'm asking, because if they get a temporary, supposedly a temporary placard, and unless this is specific to one with a permanent disability, you could have people who get the temporary placard getting a four-year plate because you buy a license, a car license for a year. And I guess... I was wondering if we're going to recreate the problem we had before when the disability community came in and were complaining about the fact that they were being usurped by people that weren't disabled.
Yeah, the when we talked to the disability community, they didn't raise that question. We've got somebody with maybe more expertise on this particular question than I have.
Thank you, members of the committee, Mr. Chair. My name is Jeff Bangberg, and I'm an advocate, and I also work alongside of Margo Hendick from the Minnesota Council on Disability. And I think the concern that you have, Representative Leader, is one of whether or not that placard is temporary or permanent. And one of the issues that the disability community fought strongly for a few years ago was the fact that that those cards be barcoded in order for the police officers to make sure that they were going to, that they were meant for the car that it was designed for. In other words, each placard had a car that it belonged to, so to speak. And so it was very difficult to see if that placard was in compliance. That helped satisfy some of our concerns. The disability community, if I could speak to myself, does have a concern about abuse of using multiple cards. If you have a temporary disability, it's my understanding you do not qualify for a plate that is put on your vehicle. You have to use the placard. The placards are either temporary or they are for people who are permanently disabled. And there used to be a color code system, and I thought there still was. But I can't verify that fact right now. But if that maybe helps address some of the questions that you have about this issue. But the concern that Ms. Hendick did have was that at least we restrict it to no more than two, so there won't be a potential propensity for abuse.
Thank you, Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm glad that you came to testify, because I was concerned. I knew it was always a problem. Right. Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much. Members, are there any other questions about House File 2408 as amended? If not, I
renew my motion to recommend that House File 2408 as amended pass with recommendation to pass, and then head on to the Transportation Finance Committee. All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion carries. Members,
thank you.
I will need to leave in about 5 minutes or so, and Representative Medora will take the gavel, and if we have time to get to her bill, then Representative Portman will take the gavel for hers. But we have a very important bill before us now, Representative Yarrow. Maybe if Representative Medora, you could take, I'll start, and then you can. Why don't we do this for the sake of continuity? Why don't you take the gavel? I'll stick around for the first few minutes of the testimony, and then you'll be in full control.
Ooh. And Representative Giles knows that I like being in full control.
Okay.
Okay. Well, if you can, have we moved the bill? Have we done anything yet?
No. I would be happy to move this bill. House File 1822. And Representative Yarrow, is there a fiscal note? I didn't see one.
Madam Chair and Representative Hornstein, no, I haven't seen it. I didn't get one myself. There also is an amendment that the staff for Matt prepared. I asked to include outlawing text messaging because that's a bigger problem than cell phone.
And thank you very much. You know, Representative Yarrow, and I hadn't had a chance to talk about this, but I'm very interested in this. I was drafting a bill as well, so I'm very much appreciative of your effort to do that, and that's a growing problem as well. So do you want to then explain the amendment? So this is the A1 amendment. I think it just seems pretty straightforward of adding the texting piece. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and the House Research recommended a language to be conformed with the present laws. I have in my bill a telephone and a mobile, but we're including cell phones too, to be more clear. Is that
okay.
What it is, Matt?
Okay, so clarifying language. Any questions? I am just in such a chair mode here. I got a little carried away. I apologize.
Well, that.
Representative Medora, I think it's about 3:30, and I need to. I think it was the excitement about the text messaging.
You're coming back in 5 minutes,
but.
Okay. So at this point now, do we have the full amendment here? So it's the A1 amendment. Do we need to the amendment, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So,
okay.
Yarrow, would you like to?
Madam Chair and Chair Lady, and members of the subcommittee, House File 1822 is a bill that was originally introduced banning cell phone use while driving altogether, and then we compromised and said that you may use the cell phone while driving, but you would have to have a device so that when you're talking on the phone while driving, it's hands free, and there are devices that can be bought for very reasonable amount, and it's only once until it goes bad. There are some exemptions, and there are five of them right now. You may use it as a public safety answering point by 9/11 is needed. Hospital, clinic, or doctor's office, an ambulance service provider, a fire department, or law enforcement agency, or a first aid. And then I've just spoken with the Truckers Association, who supports the bill, but they would like a small amendment number 6 on the second page, 2.4, that would say that provided that Homeland Security regulations are observed or something like that. We can work that out later and get that language later. I'm not sure if that's the right thing, but we can get them here.
Representative Yard, would that go, the next place for this bill, I'm understanding, is public safety? Is that correct? Is that?
No, Madam Chair, it doesn't have to be public safety because I'm not imposing any new punishments or laws or fines.
Okay. So where would you like the bill to travel to next?
Well, it doesn't cost anything unless someone gets stopped. There's no money needed because we already have law enforcement enforcing seatbelt laws and so on.
Thank you very much, Representative Jarr. I guess what the bill is going next back to the Transportation Finance Division for a vote there, so I'm sorry for the confusion on my part here.
Okay.
So basically, you don't have an amendment now to add this line 2.4, but you'll bring that.
Yeah, we can do that later, yeah, because they just approached me a while ago. Madam, yes?
I was just going to say, at this point, members, could we take it? Are you comfortable with us taking a vote on the amendment now and then?
Okay.
All right. Everybody has a copy of the amendment, and you can read it. Can I, all members in favor of moving Amendment A1 to House File 1822, signify by saying aye?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. So that passed there. So now the bill is in the way you want it, and if you have a testifier with you, Representative Young?
Yes, ma'am, Chairlady. I just want to say that this is really crucial. I remember 20 years ago when we passed the seatbelt law, it took about 6 or 8 years to do it. Representative Mary Forsyth of Bloomington, who unfortunately died last year, passed that bill, and I didn't think it was going to be as effective as it is. One of our members just had an accident, ended up in a ditch and turned over in his vehicle, and he had a seatbelt on, and he said he wasn't even scratched. So I think that this bill will prevent a lot of accidents, injuries, and deaths. One of our employees lost, he and his wife lost their only daughter 2 years ago, December, because she was on the cell phone and had an accident and unfortunately died. The medical journal, I think it was New England Medical Journal, had a story a couple of years ago that said that cell phone abuse while driving, use and abuse, causes as many accidents as drunk driving.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm all for prevention. Of course, it's an inconvenience to people that use them while driving, but I think it's worth having the inconvenience.
Mm-hmm.
Madam Chairlady, and we have Professor Ken Zapp here who'd like to testify. I believe the Verizon Wireless, he has been a consistent supporter of this legislation, and it passed the Senate committee, I think about 4 years ago when Dean Johnson was chairing it, 4 or 5 years ago. So I hope it passes this year so we can get going in the Senate, too.
I agree. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Zapp. You could state your name for the record and then give your testimony.
Thank you very much. Ken Zapp. I teach economics at Metropolitan State University, and I thank you for your funding of higher education.
You're welcome.
It's the most important economic development expenditure the state can make.
Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'm doing this for several reasons. One, back in the year 2000, my stepson Ryan was broadsided at a when he had a green light in South Minneapolis. The public safety officer who came told him if he would have been half a second earlier, he'd be dead. The driver ran the red light, was talking on the cell phone. He admitted he was not paying attention. That was 8 years ago, and since then I've been trying to win support for this public safety issue. I'd like to briefly call attention to the materials which was handed out. I have a summary of recent research on the topic. You have an op-ed piece that I had published in the St. Paul Pioneer Press. I hate to say it was 7 years ago, but as Representative Yarrow says, it takes some time to make positive change. And then you have an article from the New York Times last week, front page article from the New York Times. It's The article talks about two horrifying issues. One, five young girls driving in upstate New York were killed when the driver was text messaging and the car went across the road. Five young women killed. At the same time, the journalist in this article talks about how the car manufacturers and other companies are proliferating technologies for use by drivers in the car, making driving that much more dangerous. It is horrifying to me, and I ask you to vote on the side of public safety here. Convenience must come second to public safety. When we fly in an airplane, we all accept the fact that we go through screening for public safety. It's inconvenient, but we need to do it. It's equally serious here. What I'd like to do is to highlight some of the most important issues here. By the way, a survey was done at the State Fair a few years ago. 62% of the people supported the prohibition against using cell phones while driving. This has wide support. This is a nonpartisan issue. People of all parties support this. It's a public safety issue. I happen to live in uptown in Minneapolis. It's dangerous to walk across the street when people are using their cell phones, not obeying the traffic signals, especially not obeying the no turn on red signs. I want to stress that the research is absolutely sound here. Dr. David Sawyer, University of Utah, quote, "The impairment associated with using a cell phone while driving can be as profound as those associated while driving while drunk." This is taken from the journal Human Factors. In May of last year, Washington State became the first state to ban the practice of text messaging while driving. They joined New York, New Jersey, District of Columbia, Connecticut, and starting this year, California, in outlawing speaking on handheld cell phones while driving. I must tell you, the vast majority of industrialized countries have banned the use of cell phones while driving. A study by the Liberty Mutual Research Institute for Safety and Students Against Destructive Decisions among teens found text messaging to be their biggest distraction while driving. 37% said that text messaging was extremely or very distracting. A survey by Insura Nationwide found that 19% of motorists currently text message while driving. A study released in April of 2006 found almost 80% of crashes and near crashes involved some form of driver inattention within 3 seconds of the event. The new study found that most common distraction was cell phone use. This is the Virginia Transportation Institute and National Highway Traffic Safety Administration study. Motorists who use cell phones while driving are 4 times as likely to get into crashes seriously enough to injure themselves, according to the study by the Institute of Highway Safety. Drivers who are distracted by talking on cell phones or dialing numbers while driving are causing more and more accidents. Some municipalities have banned using cell phones while driving because it's caused such a major problem. You must talk while you drive. The safest way is to use a hands-free phone cradle installed in your car so that you can see while it's driving with 2 hands. That's from the Insurance Information Institute, November 2007. This September, we had a horrible tragedy. 2 high school senior women, Minnetonka, were killed driving. In November, the public safety report on that accident found that the driver was punching into her iPhone just before she ran off the road. To me, this is a proper role for government. I'm an economist. I don't want the government to interfere with the efficiency of an economy. However, we have a responsibility to use our laws to provide public safety. Laws are not perfect, but we can use them to articulate society's interests and society's goals. I would be happy to respond to any questions. I should mention on the last page, you also have a copy of the resolution from the Minnesota Medical Association, in which they also support a law which would outlaw cell phone use while driving. They passed this several years ago. It's still in force.
Thank you, Mr. Zepp. Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I see a representative from MnDOT behind us looking at his cell phone here, and I was wondering if maybe we could get Mr. Rudin to come up and see if he's got any statistics on how many cell phone related accidents we've had.
If he's texting. Would you like to pursue that? Yes. Actually,
and I was wondering if Mr. Rudin would come up and see if we've got any statistics on automobile-related accidents that relate to cell phone use.
I don't have that with me. I can certainly get that and provide it to the committee. We get our statistics from Department of Public Safety, Office of Traffic Safety. Between the two departments, we can certainly get that.
Madam Chair,
yes.
Is this going to transportation?
It is. The next stop for it is our finance division. Perhaps at that point, you would like to come forward with that information. Thank you very much, Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Seems to be the most trying time for your driving is when you're punching the number in or your text messaging. And this bill does not cover that, because I don't see what the danger is in having your cell phone propped on your dashboard or some kind of device to hold it, both hands on the steering wheel and talking. You do that all the time with people in your car. This is not really covering the dangerous part of use of cell phones, as far as I can see. I don't know who wants to answer that.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Well, my understanding is that the bill outlaws handheld cell phones, does not prohibit the use of hands-free cell phones. Okay. Secondly, I believe that Representative Yarrow offered an amendment to add text messaging.
I wouldn't read it that way, but maybe, Madam Chair, maybe the amendment did something besides that. Answer my question, I guess, is the best way to...
Thank you, Representative Portman.
I think at line 1.14, where it says no person may use a mobile telephone while operating a motor vehicle, use to me, sorry to be a lawyer on this point, but means any kind of use. And so whether you're texting with it or emailing with it or looking at the sports scores and looking up a movie on Google, that would all seem to be covered by the word use.
Unless, read on.
Unless the mobile.
I guess I didn't totally catch your concern then. You're saying you don't want people to be texting and surfing and dialing and...
When it's dangerous, Madam Chair, yeah. And Representative Hortman, is when you're using your hands and not... And so if you got to dial up the number, you can't do that hands-free unless you get really expensive equipment, which most people are not going to get. So I don't see where this bill, unless it just bans them completely, is going to handle the problem. If you have it on a rack where it's where you're talking with it, that's not a problem, because you're talking to people as you're driving anyway in the car with both hands on the wheel. The problem is when you got to take that phone and dial in the number you want, mm-hmm. or text messaging, if we've got that in here. So I don't see where this, even though the telephone is equipped and used with a hands-free device, you got to somehow do input on it.
Representative Earhart, I think Mr. Burris has a comment to make.
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart,
part of the definitions in the bill includes the definition of the term use, and the amendment added to that definition. On the amendments, page 1, lines 8 and 9, it added text messaging as one of the items that would be considered use. The definition itself is in the bill on page 1, line 13, and includes talking and listening, so that the use definition would instead read, use means talking, text messaging, or listening on a cellular phone. As to the question of whether dialing would be encompassed by that, that would there'd probably be a multiple interpretation arguments on that, and would be up to a court to decide through the court process. If you know, that could be added as well if the author and the committee wanted to go that route to specifically identify dialing.
Representative Portman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just in terms of further discussion, to me, when I read this, if I'm a police officer and I figure I got to enforce this thing, what it means is, if I pull a guy over for speeding and he's got his phone lying there, it's on speakerphone and he's talking, I can't issue a violation under this section. But if he's holding it and talking or dialing and he was speeding or ran a stop sign, then I can. So I hear what you're saying about ambiguity.
No, it's more... Yeah, I'm sure it's the most dangerous time when you're trying to dial this, because you got to take your eyes off the road, for one thing.
I think the dialing is illegal. I mean, if you dial before, I don't know about you, but when my kids call me, we dial in the parking lot, just a little earpiece in, and go. So the way that I read this, and I don't know if this is sort of the common sense interpretation, is you can't be doing that sort of use while driving. That sort of use is not lawful. Because that's not hands-free. You can't dial hands-free. Well, maybe some people can. But
only if they have a very, very expensive phone.
The kind of dialing you're talking about, I believe, would be forbidden under this. My
Well, perhaps what we could ask the author to do is to meet with Mr. Burris and maybe both of the representatives here and be sure that we get a clarification on that before it comes to the Transportation Finance Committee. Is that... Can we do that? You can do that? Would you feel comfortable going that route? Because I think we do need to get this resolved if we're bringing it to the Transportation Finance Committee.
Madam Chair, can I ask one more question? Do other states just flat out ban the phones without fiddling with who's holding the phone and where it is on the dashboard and all that?
They ban the use of handheld cell phones, so voice-activated... cell phones are acceptable. The laws in other states are stronger. I mean, you could be ticketed just for using it, not in. You don't have to be pulled over for some other reason.
Okay. Madam Chair, I think they're stronger in other states, other municipalities, and even foreign countries.
So perhaps we should get some clarification on this, and you can perhaps amend this or change this bill.
Later.
Deal with that at
the next stop, or
So can we at this point vote to pass without recommendation as amended to return back to the Transportation Finance Committee and follow up there?
Madam Chair, it would be going to the Transportation Finance.
Yes.
Okay.
So all those in favor of passing 1822 without recommendation but as amended to return back to the Transportation Finance Committee, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. That's your next stop. Thank you very much. And now, Cedar Avenue. Here we go.
I vote for you. I gotta go.
I know. Didn't we?
Okay. Representative Medor,
10 minutes.
Our committee administrator tells me we have 10 minutes.
10 minutes, and believe me, I know these two gentlemen. They will work with me and be sure we get there.
Representative Medor, I would presume that you move House File 1820. No,
18.
25-38 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to Transportation Finance? To be considered for inclusion in the bonding bill.
That is correct, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members, this is a bill also asking for appropriation for the Cedar Avenue Bus Rapid Transit. We're requesting $22 million. I have two testifiers, and again, we will be brief and to the point. Right? Yes? Okay. All right. First, I'd like to introduce Commissioner Tom Egan, and he will speak to the bill.
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Tom Egan, Thomas Egan. I am one of three Dakota County commissioners who serves on a group called the Cedar Task Force, the Cedar Group. We are a group that is responsible for trying to move forward bus rapid transit along the Cedar Corridor and make it a reality. We want to thank you for the opportunity to meet and discuss the Cedar Avenue Transit Way project bonding request this afternoon. This project is the number one priority for Dakota County Board and is an important part of our transportation mix as congestion is a fast-growing problem along the corridor. Legislatively, we're very pleased that the Met Council and area legislators have been supportive of the project and the funds keep us on schedule. Now, the state legislature's commitment to the project by providing a total of $15 million in bonding, together with another $5.8 million that we've received in federal money, has put the project well on its way to becoming reality in the year 2010. We're excited with the progress we've made in developing the Cedar Avenue Transitway, but we have much more to do, and we need your assistance and support for the state bonding request. We didn't submit a request last year because we could not have spent the funds last year, understanding that we would be requesting money during the 2008 legislative session. We currently have a funding gap due in part to inflationary increases. Now, the Urban Partnership Agreement is helping to fill some of the gap to the tune of about $3 million. But for the most part, the UPA is advancing facility development that was not scheduled until the 2010-2015 timeframe. We need additional state bonding to make the Cedar BRT bus rapid transit a reality. With that in mind, I want to give you a brief update on the status of the project, some information on the 2008 bonding request, and share some specifics on the UPA and the Cedar Avenue BRT corridor. First of all, the Cedar Avenue BRT implementation plan phase one status. I'd like to cover several points. The total estimated cost is $38.1 million. The first point I'd like to cover is improvements to shoulders through Apple Valley to accommodate bus operations. The status of that is that preliminary engineering and environmental work is underway. The second point is expansion of park and ride capacity at the Apple Valley Transit Center. The status of that is $5 million in state bond funds were used in December 2007 to acquire the site for the transit center expansion, and design work there is underway as well. The third point is development and construction of the Cedar Grove Transit Station in Eagan at Trunk Highway 13 and Cedar Avenue. The status of that is that the site plan is completed and negotiations are underway with MnDOT for the land acquisition. The fourth point that I'd like to cover is development of park and ride facilities in Lakeville in the vicinity of 185th Street and Cedar. The status of that is that the site location study is underway and will be completed in May of this year. And the final point is Palomino Hills Park and Ride conceptual development. The status of that is that the concept work is underway. Now, we are on schedule. I think this is important. We are on schedule to have the facilities in place to begin bus rapid transit operation in the year 2010. It is reality if funding is secured. Now, the next point is the 2008 state bonding request. I'd like to at least give you an overview of that. The $22 million request for Cedar Avenue addresses three areas. Actual inflationary increases in everything from right-of-way to materials as identified by MnDOT are 10% per year since the year 2005. That amounts to an increase in phase one implementation costs estimated to bring the project from a cost of $31.8 million to $38 million in 2008 dollars. the preferred alternative for road improvements through Apple Valley to accommodate shoulder running bus operations has been identified. Cost estimates for the improvements are being refined, and a preliminary estimate in 2005 was that it would cost $6.6 million, but the actual cost could easily double that figure. Funding for these improvements has not been secured, and this will greatly impact bus operations, which we believe will be implemented by the year 2010. And the final issue is just to cover with you an overview of the Urban Partnership Agreement and what impact that will have on this project. The Urban Partnership Agreement, the UPA funding, should be viewed as a supplement to the Cedar Avenue Bus Rapid Transit implementation and not a replacement for our $22 million request. The UPA funding will advance station facilities along the corridor not planned for post-2010 implementation at 140th Street, 147th Street, and also help to provide adequate funding for facilities in Lakeville and Eagan that are part of the Phase 1 implementation, but they are not fully funded. Now, of the $22 million bonding request, which was prepared prior to the award of the UPA, $3.2 million is overlap with the Cedar request, and it relates to the stations at 185th Street in Lakeville and the Cedar Grove station in Eagan currently being developed. So again, it's a very important project. It's the number one project in Dakota County. We've given it our highest priority, and we really want to thank you again for the opportunity to share the Cedar Avenue BRT project information, and we sincerely appreciate your consideration on this request.
Well, we also have Mr. Crum, who is in charge of transit planning. If we have any questions specific to this, if any of the members do, Mr. Crum is prepared to give testimony.
Representative Medora, I have a question in light of your testifier's testimony. Are you interested in amending the amount down to deal with the overlap issue?
Well, we have discussed that briefly before we came here today, and I asked the same question. I'd like Mr. Crum, our transit manager, the Dakota County Transit Manager, to address that if you would.
Madam Chair, my name is Dan Crum, Dakota County Transit Manager. Yes, we would be willing to amend that down. Again, the bonding request was submitted before the award of the UPA, and the status of UPA funding hasn't been defined yet either. In terms of legislative action, so we left it at $22 million, but it could be amended down to $19 million. But if the UPA match doesn't come through, we do need the $22 million.
Exactly, Madam Chair. That's our predicament here. We would be agreeable to doing that should we get our matching funds for the UPA, but at this point we don't know because that's contingent on transportation bill passing. So we're in a bit of a pickle here.
Passing the bill is not the problem. It's just part two. Representative Manure, would you, as we pass this along to the bonding committee, would you also be willing to accept a lower amount if the bonding committee only has a lower amount to provide?
Madam Chair and members, actually we are prepared to do that. I've already spoken to Chair Houseman to be sure that we do have funding in there to meet the needs that we have. So as this moves along, we are prepared to make those adjustments.
Members, are there any other questions on that proposal? So the motion would be that House File 2538 be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Transportation Finance Committee for possible inclusion in the bonding bill. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The motion passes. The bill will be sent on to Transportation Finance.
Thank you very much.
Members, we're adjourned.